is a commercial-free, streaming on-demand presentation from 92.9 WBPN.
Led Zeppelin first toured their native UK in October 1968. From then until the fall of 1969, the group did four US and four UK tours. Their self-titled debut dropped in January of 1969, and while they were touring, they recorded Led Zeppelin II. That record dropped in October of 1969 and went to number one on the Billboard album charts. The band completed four more tours of the United States before the spring of 1970. It was then that polls showed they had taken over as the most popular rock and roll band on earth from the previous eight-year record holder, the Beatles, Jimmy Page.
The creative process for Led Zeppelin III changed because the first album had been done, I wouldn't say in a hurry, because it was done efficiently. And from the period before that, we'd already started doing a few dates in Scandinavia. And we didn't stop. We didn't stop working all the way through 1969. And we managed to do the second album during the time that we were also doing dates and tours in America. And we got our sort of first, what you call a break. And it was nice, because it was fabulous, all the energy of being on the road. It was nice to actually sort of breathe a sigh of relief and actually take in the scent of the general countryside and being home. And it was nice to be able to sort of slow the mechanism down. It didn't stop, actually, there was still writing going on, but it wasn't at this frantic pace of actually having to do a show that night, etc., etc. So the cottage in Wales was one of Robert's ideas. I don't know whether he'd stayed there with his family when he was younger, whatever it was exactly, but he knew of this cottage, and he suggested that we went down there. And actually, I think everyone had an invite, but Robert and I went. You know, it was good because the acoustic guitars were there. There was literally no electricity in this place. It was gas lights. It was wonderful, log fire, gas lights, and little tape recorders, which then were around, little cassette tape recorders. So the electricity that was in that place was the electricity that we were producing with the music, if you like.
Robert Plant.
It had been a real fast and quite a roller coaster to get to that point. And from what I can remember, we really needed to take stock. And we were very aware or wishful to make a departure of some kind and to calm it all down a bit. And I'd been spending time since I was a child up there in the Welsh mountains in Snowdonia. So I suggested to Jimmy that we should go up there. And so we loaded everything into an old Jeep I had, including my wife and my daughter, who was two, and a dog called Strider and all that stuff. And and Jimmy and Charlotte, and off we went. And we lived on the side of the mountain, and it was very comfortable, really. It was a Spartan life for a while, but it was what we needed, and we marched out every day, Jimmy with his acoustic, sat by the side of relative waterfalls, no sign of Gollum. But it was fun, you know. I mean, we wanted to try and break off, break away, and so we had an affinity then, he and I, and even if it wasn't really absolutely the most fruitful moment of time, it at least allowed us the space to have space. And that meant that when we went on to write further on down the line, we had developed the ability to create more space in the music.
Soon after their days at
Dronnerire,
Jimmy and Robert were joined by John Bonham and John Paul Jones at another locale to begin recording using the Rolling Stones mobile studio.
Well, we rented a cold, damp house, I think, to do it in, which was also quite inspirational because you just wanted to get out of it. So it wasn't that laid back. But I suppose it was the first time we'd ever all sat down together and just tried things, you know, tried lots of different things. We had acoustic instruments as well hanging around. And it was just really nice to sit around and just sort of stretch out a little bit, I suppose, and just experiment. The band was never about making the same album twice. It was never, oh, that was successful, let's try and do it again. And I don't know what the record company thought. They were kept away from us. They would have had to got past Peter Grant first, which they never successfully did. Armit told me that years later, that everybody was banned. Nobody came near the studios. Kept well away. You get what we're going to deliver to you, which was fantastic. You just got all the freedom. And once we'd made one record, that was it. No, okay, let's see what we can do next.
Wildly free, wildly experimental, and wildly successful. A rare trifecta that Led Zeppelin scored, selling in the neighborhood of 300 million albums worldwide and counting. In October of 1970, Led Zeppelin III was unleashed to an audience that was chomping at the bit for it. Now regarded as a masterwork, of course, the band had to bear uneducated criticism from the rock press at the time. No matter, their march towards rock and roll immortality proceeded uninterrupted. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Over the next hour, we'll celebrate the 50th anniversary of this turning point in Led Zeppelin's career and delve into the sumptuously remastered album and its companion disc that was issued in 2014 as part of several deluxe releases. Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, and John Paul Jones are going to be your musical guides. Welcome to Led Zeppelin 3 at 50. All access. Immigrant Song from Led Zeppelin III. That song came out as a single in the United States against the band's wishes, and it made it to number 16 on the charts. Robert Plant.
Well, you'd also got Immigrant Song, which is kind of having been up in Iceland, and again, my love of history and the way that the British Isles has been fragmented and smashed that many times by different cultures. That was a little bit of a diversion, which created a lot of tattoos and a lot of rock singers who had double-bladed axes on their biceps for a while. But I think, you know, just picking up stuff as you go along, it's pastoral is good. Because, yeah, the dynamism against that music is important. You know, I have to advocate positivity from a vocalist's point of view.
Jimmy Page.
Prior to that time, I'd been in the Yardbirds, and it was really apparent what was going on in America, which was that there had been a number of FM stations that had established. And these FM stations were playing what we'd now call alternative music to the singles. And you'd even get to hear them playing a whole side of an album. And I thought, oh boy, this is wonderful. This is the area to go in. Not the singles market, because the problem with the singles market was you have a single that everyone's worked on, you know, this is the single, and you'd find bands that did that. The rest of the album material wasn't very good because they were a singles market band. Not only that, when they did the next album, they had to do something, or invariably they did, something that sounded very much like the single off the first album, so everyone knew who they were. We didn't do that.
You've heard mention of the cottage where Jimmy and Robert wrote the first batch of songs for Led Zeppelin III.
How do you pronounce that? Because I...
Brunnerreier.
Say it again?
Brunnerreier.
Led Zeppelin with a song called
Brunnerreier.
Stomp, immortalizing the cottage in Snowdonia where Robert and Jimmy spent some idyllic time decompressing and writing songs in the company of their loved ones. Jimmy Page.
That's the Way is one of the ones that got written there in that period. We'd done a bit of rehearsing, I think, that time around that period. I'd sort of done some stuff at Robert's house and just getting together. I don't think John Paul Jones was there then. But I do know that when I went there, there was a bit of rehearsing there, okay? So there was Friends and Immigrant Song and Out on the Tiles. So there were these two areas of where the writing was coming from And I think it's reflective in many ways, that album, and the sources, you know, the sort of gallows pole, and that is just definitely the right way to be going.
I don't know how I'm gonna tell you I can't play with you no more. I don't know how I'm gonna do what mama told me, my friend, the boy next door. All day long, you're in the darkest side of Mama say to me, that's the way, oh, that's the way it ought to be, yeah, yeah. Mama say that's the way it ought to stay, yeah, yeah. Ooh. Yesterday I saw you standing by the river, and weren't those tears that filled your eyes? And all the fish that lay in dirty water dying, had they got you hypnotized? Kissing tiny flowers, but all that lives is born to die. And so I say to you that nothing really matters, and all you do is stand and cry. All your ears have turned away, but now's the time to look and look again at what you see. Is that the way it ought to stay? That's the way it ought to be. Oh, don't you know that? Yeah. Oh.
was another thing that was written in that house in Bronner Eyre, up in Snowdonia.
The beautiful That's the Way from Led Zeppelin III, now celebrating its 50th birthday.
We kind of prided ourselves with the fact that nobody else could do our thing.
More of their thing in our celebration when Led Zeppelin III at 50 All Access returns after this short break.
It's a bigger and better variety every day when you work. Thanks for making the switch to 92.9 WBPM. By the way, your customers have told us they like it too.
If you just joined us, better late than never. Welcome to our celebration of the 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin III on All Access.
You were saying yesterday that the third album was where you first started to...
Well, the thing opened up a lot much more then, I think. Although it was there, I mean, on the second album there were Ramble On, and first album there was Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You. There was the kind of acoustic element, there was that sort of... the variety was there. My performance, I wasn't that pleased with first and second, but by the third I was being able to sing... I mean... Gallows Pole is one of my favourite tracks. An Immigrant Song is too, you know. And they were so far between the two. And that, to me, was the beginning of me actually saying, yeah, boy, you can do something. You know, rather than it all being in the one idiom, if you like, or close enough. So, yeah, I started getting a bit of pride then.
Hangman, hangman, hold it a little while. I think I see my friends coming right a many a mile. Friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole. What did you bring me? Keep me from the gallows pole. I couldn't get no silver, I couldn't get no gold. You know that we're too damn poor from the gallows pole. Hangman, hangman, hold it a little while. I think I see my brother coming riding many a mile. Brother, you give me some silver as you get a little gold.
Gallows Pole, a coupling of the powerhouse and the pastoral from Led Zeppelin. John Paul Jones.
We were different from everybody else. The other bands were sort of coming out of the hippie era, and everything was kind of relaxed, to put it mildly, on the stage. You know, they'd play a song and they'd wonder about what key and what you do and all that sort of stuff. And we would just, we'd come on stage and just bang, 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 just really hit it. And it was a very exciting band. And it must have been very exciting for the audience at that time because, as I said, everything was pretty laid back by then, by what, 60, 69, 70. And we weren't. Especially around that period. As I said, because that whole sort of the hippie scene and the do your own thing, and I mean, we kind of prided ourselves with the fact that nobody else could do our thing. Led Zeppelin's Out on the Tiles, which is an Irish expression for partying into the wee hours at nightclubs or bars.
Our party still has more from Jimmy, Robert, and John Paul when Led Zeppelin 3 at 50 All Access returns after this short bathroom break.
I bet you think we're simply a radio station playing more great songs. But stick around and you'll find out that 92.9 WBPM is so much more.
We're happy you hung around for the final part of Led Zeppelin 3 at 50, All Access. I'm Dan Neer. The world's first impression of Led Zeppelin centered around their take on the blues. Here's Robert Plant's first impression of that precious American art form that he experienced as a teenager in Wales.
When I was a kid, and I used to go to all the folk clubs and listen to people singing unaccompanied vocal work, rather in the lines of sort of English folk song, the derivation of English folk song, the unaccompanied coal miner from Durham wailing away about the bloke's making all the money and he's not getting any. And then you had the Woody Guthrie element, the kind of Americana, with the Jack Kerouac existentialist sort of movement. So you've got all this kind of blues stroke folk stroke jazz, which I was a little young to have a comprehensive schooling on it, but I was just about old enough to look like I could get into these clubs because they served alcohol, and I got in. I used to sit at the back and listen to all this stuff, and I was weaned and drawn into blues. And the idea of some troubadour going up and down Mississippi River, kidding off on at the landing and playing and really having a good time and being kind of not a modern highwayman, but like it's not even the bard who goes from court to court and sings the praises of the king and then moves on safely. It's just the idea of this guy getting away with it. So there I am, 16, 15 for cash, listening to this stuff and going, squeeze my lemon. Sounds great.
Led Zeppelin took that music and created their own intoxicating brew, as witnessed by the song Since I've Been Loving You on Led Zeppelin 3.
There was a version of Since I've Been Loving You that I knew we'd recorded Since I've Been Loving You twice. We tried to hit it and it was, I couldn't remember the reasons why we didn't pull it off, and then we did it again, and that's the sort of definitive version that you're all aware of. But this version is absolutely astonishing. It's just the four of us playing it. And it's sort of raw, but it's scary to listen to. And it does bring into play that term that's been used for us, maybe other bands as well, but awesome, foursome. And boy, this is just a perfect representation of what this band could do. You know, one take, two takes, that's it, you know. I want to stress that these things are the rough mixes or the working mixes of the time. So in my search, going through for anything that was Since I've Been Loving You to do the comparison versions, this just came out and I was like, oh, thank you, God. It's just fantastic, you know. Working from seven to 11.
I don't think that's right. I've really been the best of fools. I did what I could, yeah. I pour some love you, baby. How I love you, darling. How I love you, baby. My love you, girl. Girl, baby, since I've been loving you, yeah. Tell me that you didn't need me.
tears, it felt like rain. Yeah. I hear them falling, falling. I hear them falling, falling. So high, baby, baby, you let me down so low. I gotta tell you, I just don't know which way to go. Oh, 'cause you're a little bitty girl.
Combination of the original and alternate versions of Led Zeppelin's Since I've Been Loving You. You'll find both complete songs on the deluxe and super deluxe releases of Led Zeppelin III. Robert Plant.
You're on your own. You have to be counted alongside every other man. And so I was very fortunate to have a strong family and a rural life. And I never lived in a city, really. And so there were a lot of pastoral things around me that made me feel some sort of crazy empathy with my surroundings, I think. And I think the company that we were keeping in those days with the Incredible String Band and with Robin Williamson and with the Fairport Gang and all those people together, there was quite a pastoral and a mellow lyrical thing going on. And that was really inspiring for me. Being British, I couldn't use fantastic city names or barroom stuff, and I had no interest in that at all. You know, there's nothing evocative about singing about Wolverhampton, really, but you can sing Get Out of Tulsa, somehow it seems okay. So I was leaning more and more into that sort of other world of the pastoral and being impressed and reading lots of historical and quasi-historical writings and stuff. I was just drawn to trying to express something that gave some soliloquy. But I was very, very naive and very accomplished for quite a long time. But then as time went on and my world got bigger, my shoulders got broader, I got into it more and I was able to express myself better. But it was always the idea of trying to couple what I've got to sing about with the powerhouse that was around me. And the subtlety of the powerhouse too, that has to be said, because Zeppelin was a very remarkable beast.
Red light, I'm on fly. Still there shining, I can't stop, keep on climbing, looking for what I knew. Had a friend, she once told me, you got low, you ain't lonely. Now she's gonna let me only, looking for what I knew. Mm-hmm.
face is cracked from smiling. All the fears that she's been hiding. And it seems that pretty soon everybody's gonna know.
The atmospheric Friends into the joyous outburst of Celebration Day, once again showing off the diversity of Led Zeppelin. Sadly, that's the last song that we can fit into our all-access celebration, but just before we go, the band members share their final thoughts with us. First up, John Paul Jones on hearing the alternate versions of songs.
Well, reminded me about how good a band it was. Also, actually, it reminded me how much I missed John Bonham, especially listening to the things that were sort of in mid-development before the focus was on what the song was about or the vocals or anything, just hearing rhythm tracks and things like that. I just was sent back to the place and time and just remembered how amazing he was.
Robert Plant.
All we wanted to do was keep stretching. This is the whole thing about Led Zeppelin or about Jimmy or myself or anything that happens. John Paul too. And we wanted to try and stretch it out and open it up and change, just shock ourselves to see exactly what we could do. We just started trying going back into more of an acoustic vein. It wasn't an area that we hadn't touched because your time is going to come, babe, I'm going to leave you on. Being exposed to the incredible string band and Roy Harper and all that sort of stuff around, which was music for the head, which was coming from more acoustic based. And that's what we did, you know, and I think it was a great success. The least successful Led Zeppelin album. And with the critics screaming for our lives and blood, saying, what's this crap? It was probably one of our finest moments. Yeah. And the fact that we deemed that we had to do it at all is a fine moment.
Jimmy Page.
And I had very, very sure and firm ideas, and positive ideas, about what I wanted to do with the band, if I got this band together. And I sure as heck wanted to produce it because I knew what way it was going to go. I mean, in the, you know, this first album, at that time, it was so radical because it was filled with so many ideas that people just hadn't, it just hadn't occurred to them. It was a way ahead. And, you know, when you had something like, you know, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You and things like that, nobody had gone in any of these directions at all. When you had the wonderful musicians like John Bonham, John Paul Jones and Robert, who really develops this whole process of the recording and the albums as they come, his songwriting abilities are great, you know, his lyrics and that. I really did want to produce it because I really could see a way distance ahead. You know, if the band was going to stay together, then you could really start, as I say, going on this road where these initial ideas are expanded and not even finesse, but just expanded and go right over the horizon and, you know, in every direction.
Led Zeppelin III is available in various formats wherever you buy music. Led Zeppelin 3 at 50, All Access, was produced in New York and New Jersey for Atlantic Records and Swan Song, all rights reserved. No portion may be reproduced without the written permission of the producers. Special thanks to Jason Elzey of Rhino Records and Rich Mahon of Rich Mahon Promotions. I'm Dan Neer.
Hi, this is Robert Plant.
I'm John Paul Jones.
And I'm Jimmy Page. And thanks for listening.